Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, joined today by Michael Morris. Let's get into stuff for today, and our first story we're going to be talking a little bit about South Africa's Competition Commission. So on this podcast, we've often talked about the many impediments to economic growth. Why do we want economic growth? Because it's the only way to take South Africa, to transform South Africa from a society that is ridden with poverty, depression, disease, suffering, into one where people have an opportunity to embrace all of their choices and decisions in their lives and become the people that they wish to be. Well, we often focus on how policies like BEE, for example, distort the merit-based systems that markets and governments are supposed to work on, but also create space for corruption and extra premiums and costs in order to achieve social engineering goals. That's not the only things holding back South Africa's economy, though. The Competition Commission is one that others have cited as being a major hindrance to our economic growth. And that's a view I tend to agree with. The Competition Commission is supposed to be there as a sort of body to prevent collusion and encourage competition within our market, to prevent the domination of markets by a number of small players. Now, the more sort of free market libertarianish, I think, would make a good argument that such a commission is not necessarily really needed, because monopolies created by businesses tend to be pretty unstable anyway and will usually fall apart. Whether you think we do need a competition commission or not, I think it's pretty fair to say that our competition commission has in many ways exceeded its mandate and has been highlighted in a recent piece about how much it is in fact holding back South Africa's growth. Business Leadership SA, Busisizwe Mavuso, says that the commission took, for example, 3 years to conclude one specific case where it was determining whether it was going to be legal to go ahead with such a, I think it was a merger of two companies. She said, "I recently spoke to the CEO of one of the large US banks trying to advise their clients in terms of how to engage with our markets. There is huge frustration. The fundamental problem of the competition law in this country is inconsistency in its application. The Competition Commission is going to have to look at the length of time it takes to conclude some of these transactions. It takes a long time, which is totally unacceptable." A number of foreign economists have concluded that the slowness of our Competition Commission is something that really holds back our economy, particularly getting outside investment in. You'll have a big company that comes in, like, I don't know, we had Walmart a few years ago, for example. They wanted to buy Massmart in South Africa. And in part, using the mechanism of the Competition Commission, there was this sort of slowing down of that deal. It did eventually go through. But, you know, you can hold up an investment for many years while the situation is investigated. The Competition Commission responded by basically saying, firstly, that they don't take too long. And if they do take too long, it's because they are overstretched and understaffed and not well-funded enough, which I guess is what most government organizations say when they're making things worse rather than better. But, Michael, what do you make of this? I mean, I do think the Competition Commission is a villain in the story of economic growth that hasn't gotten enough attention.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I speak as somebody who's expressly not a libertarian, and I don't have any kind of fetishistic antipathy to government, the government's presence or the state presence in society. I think it needs to be very carefully judged, very carefully chosen, and it must be subject to accountability and to the choice of society itself, which is most perfectly the case in a constitutional democracy. But I think if you're going to have an institution, especially like a competition commission, and the story bears this out, which claims to act in the public interest, then it has to act snappily or get out of the way. Because what we do know is that, as you've indicated, the self-interested mechanics of normal human free human interaction in a free society, a free economy, is such that it does produce solutions. They're not always the best solutions, but they self-correct very rapidly. Or that kind of society self-corrects very rapidly, and there are millions of choices that are brought to bear on every instance. But where you have one state directed institution which sets itself up to protect the rest of us from what it considers to be harmful to us or to harmful to the common weal, then it must be effective. It must show itself to be really serving our interests. It must act quickly, snappily, efficiently. It must be accountable. It must be able to demonstrate why it exists. And that must be demonstrably good for us. And if it isn't, there's a problem. And the very interesting instance here in the story in Business Live, based on experts at the who debated the effect of the legislation at the Gordon Institute of Business Science, apparently last week, this brings out all the kind of problems, the delays, and all the costs that are associated with that. And of course, then ultimately the impact on society and individuals like ourselves. So yeah, the key issue, I think.
It's the Competition Commission, if we're going to have one, I think that it should be fairly sort of humble. It should really be hesitant to act. It should be hesitant to get involved with, you know, the sort of normal running of business. And it should really thoroughly think about what exactly is going on in a particular industry before it decides to intervene. But our Competition Commission is not that. It's an organization which sort of pronounces from on high. And, you know, it even sometimes gets pushback from within government itself. Even the government is sometimes like, I think there was recently a case with regards to Vodacom wanted to buy a company, and the Competition Commission stopped in and said, no, you can't, because it would, you know, create a monopoly. I think it was in fixed line fiber internet or something like that. Yeah. I believe the Minister of Trade and Competition, Park Style, stepped in and said, whoa, why are you stopping this? This is everyone in the entire industry, even Vodacom's competitor, MTN, were happy with this deal. That to me is exactly kind of, you've got all the worst caricatures of government bureaucrats run amok there. And I think it's something that we will need to focus more on reforming if we actually want to see South Africa's growth levels lift and people lifted out of unemployment and poverty.
Yeah, I think very good point. And, you know, when you think of it, you know, the great virtue of an open market or free society is one in which there is, you know, open competition. And we're all looking to, you know, the best product winning, or the, you know, the best service coming out on top, and so on, the best political party being the government. It's you know, it's fundamental to what it is to be a free society where people choose, and so that is what the Competition Commission should serve. It should serve that, and I absolutely agree with you. I like that word you used, humble. They need to humbly serve that objective, that their objective is to ensure that there is competition, not reduce the competition or shut it down by default, often simply by taking too long to assess particular cases. Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to talking a little bit about the much vaunted national dialogue, which is being promised for a long time by President Ramaphosa, and no one, I think, is really clear about what exactly the role of this thing is going to be. One presumes that at best it will produce some sort of report which government will promptly ignore. But that being said, that great voice of the people, I'm of course being sarcastic, the ANC Youth League, an organization which it's difficult to work out exactly how functional it still continues to be, has weighed in on the competition. On the national dialogue's composition. There's this sort of list of eminent people. We talked about it, I think, last week with McCorney on the show. And they are concerned that there are not enough young people on the panel. Apparently, people between the age of 60 and 69 are dominating the panel. And there's, I think the oldest member is 92. The youngest member is Miss South Africa, Mia LaRue, who's 29. Now, this is a personal bugbear for me. I do not like identity politics in general, but I specifically hate age-based identity politics. Being young is a thing that literally everyone who has ever been alive has done. It is a label with a shockingly small amount of content. You know, it's not like the ANC Youth League is going to be very happy if they had some of our younger members like Anlu Kiewa and Chris Patterson as members of the National Dialogue. In fact, that would horrify them and say that there were counter-revolutionary elements being added to this National Dialogue. Be that as it may, Michael, what do you make of, you know, the national discussion around the national dialogue?
Yeah, I mean, as, you know, somebody who falls very much
a dialogue around the dialogue.
Yeah, the dialogue around the dialogue. As somebody who falls within the sort of 60 above category, I obviously think this is an absolutely wonderful idea. No. To be serious, I mean, this is actually this whole thing of this national eminent persons group is not unrelated to our first topic, and that is competition. And you know, the risk is here. What are we going to get? What are we likely to get for umpteen hundreds of millions? I forget the figure now. That was this whole thing is going to cost us. Is probably, you know, quite a nice, polite conversation among venerable South Africans, even the younger ones. I mean, the beauty queen and the rugby coach and the rugby captain. These are all fine South Africans in their own sphere and in their own right. They, you know, they're making great contributions. The elderly people have made their contribution, and it's wonderful. It's kind of a nice warm feeling to acknowledge their contribution and their status and so on. But we keep circling back to the thing which we already do every day. I was listening a little bit earlier to Tim Cohen and Mark Bounds in their podcast. Mark Bounds made the point that we engage in national dialogue all the time, every day in this country. That's what South Africans do. We don't have any difficulty expressing ourselves to one another, whether it's at the petrol station, across the shopping counter, the queue at the supermarket, or on social media. We're talking at each other and to each other and with each other all the time, very vigorously, very openly. It's one of the great things about South African society, actually, is that we tend to be quite comfortable being completely open and saying what we think. We don't need anyone else to do it on our behalf. This is what we're doing. And we go every 5 years and we vote and we produce a result. We get a government. In this case, presently, we have a government of national unity because nobody's got the overall power to hold sway. That is where we want decisions to be made, where we want there to be serious conversation, where we want there to be courageous debate and leadership and so on. And we don't need these venerable, as they may be, this venerable assembly to come together and just, you know, talk politely among themselves. I'm sure that, you know, a part of me finds it quite. I don't even know what the word is. It's quite appealing in a way that a country like this can think of such a thing. That we get to all sit down together and have this wonderful conversation, but we don't actually need it. This is what we do every day. What we do need are decisions and courageous leadership to see them through. That's
really, you know what?
Doesn't matter what
the thing is.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We do, in fact, have an institution which, for most days of the year, is debating and discussing what solutions the country should have to every single problem. In fact, it's not just an institution that has real power to change things in people's lives. It's an institution where the members are chosen by us, South Africans. It's called Parliament. This is exactly, literally what it does every day. It doesn't produce necessarily good results, but that's, you know,
that's the national dialogue.
For lack of trying. Yeah, that's the national dialogue. It goes on.
Yeah, yeah.
And there you can hear everything. You can hear a speech by the Freedom Front Plus about Afrikaans language rights. You can hear the ACDP talking about religious education and homeschooling. You can hear the MK having some awful racial attack on someone, the EFF declaring revolution, the DA talking about evidence-based solutions. All the voices are there, and they have real power to change things.
Exactly.
This is such a sort of, you know, a pointless exercise. Look, the number being floated for how much it will cost, I think, is 700 million rand or something. If we could really solve all the country's problems with 700 million rand, I'd say, cool, that's the money well spent.
Yeah, but exactly.
Yeah. 700 million rand on this. Yeah, nah.
Yeah. No, it's exactly right. Well, there we go.
All right. let's move on to our next story. We sort of picked this up last week. We didn't end up talking about it on any of our episodes, but I thought it's worth a mention, which is that the CEO of Capitec recently said that he didn't really think that South Africa's unemployment rate was as high as officially stated. The official unemployment rate is 32.9%, and the unofficial rate is, I forget the exact number, but I think it's over 42%, or close to 43%. That's if you include discouraged work seekers. And he basically said something along the lines of, well, you know, is it really this high? In other countries, like in Mexico, they have these really strong informal sectors, and I don't think Stats SA is counting all the people who are self-employed. Now, Stats SA does this survey every quarter, 30,000 people, where it asks people, are you employed or not? And that's what we get the unemployment rate from, right? It's a very rigorous thing. It involves talking to a lot of people. It's very expensive. Are there problems with it? Are there, you know, is there fiddling around the edges? Are there things that you could change? Could you get a significantly different result in some ways? Yeah, sure, to some degree. But we do not have, as the CEO of Capitec suggested, somewhere close to a 10% unemployment rate. If you go and look at the actual definition of what Stats SA uses to include people as employed, it is very generous and very broad. It's basically along the lines of anyone, have you done anything for remuneration in the last week of any amount for more than 1 hour? I think it's something like that.
Yeah.
Which is actually something that would inflate the employment rate beyond people who actually have a job. Now, there are, I'm sure, some South Africans who don't consider what they do work for various reasons. When they're asked these things by the survey, so maybe, you know, those people are misleading the survey askers. But the reality is our unemployment rate is shockingly high, and sort of fiddling around with the numbers or changing the definitions is not going to change the fact that the majority of our people have no way to escape poverty.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if we had a growth rate of 6%, And we were claiming that our unemployment rate was 39%, then maybe, you know, we'd perhaps need to go back to the figures and say, well, perhaps something's not quite right here. It doesn't really make sense. But our growth rate is you know, 1%, in that region, 1% or less, and has been for a long time. We're also paying grants to, or more grants. I don't know if it's to more people, but certainly more grants than there are people with jobs. So it's not necessarily saying that there are more people on grants than there are in jobs, but there's certainly more grants being paid than there are people with jobs. And that tells you a lot. And that also tells you that, you know, this is why I saw a comment in the story, whether it was this one or another one criticizing Mr. Faree, which said that, you know, if we did have unemployment of the rate that that Stats SA claims, we'd have revolution. Well, the reason, you know, possibly one of the reasons we don't have revolution and yet also are burdened with this terrific unemployment rate is because we're paying so many people these emergency grants. I mean, we're having to do that to just keep them out of poverty, and this is a good thing. We certainly wouldn't want to plunge people into poverty through which is a condition that of no fault of their own. It's simply an economy that isn't growing, doesn't have the growth to sustain the job creation and so on. But quite clearly, you know, people are managing to keep things going. That doesn't mean that they've got jobs. You know, it doesn't mean that we can artificially bring the unemployment rate down and, you know, surmise that there can't be this kind of high rate of unemployment because, you know, people are not revolting. It doesn't necessarily follow.
And also, you know, in many ways, South Africans are revolting against the status quo. There's, you know, when we see our low numbers of people going out to vote, that's people often disenchanted with the voting system. We see the huge number of service delivery protests. That's people who have kind of, you know, are frustrated and angry with the situation. When we see vigilante killings, there's people angry and frustrated with the way the police handle things. These are all indicators that happen every single day in South Africa. They are so common that the news barely even reports them sometimes, because they are just sort of such a fact of life for South Africa. So, you know, we do have this high unemployment rate, and we are not going to get away with it. And there are many reasons for it, and many of them start in bad policy, which together with bad management creates the horrible conditions of bad governance, which you know, have caused South Africa no end of troubles, particularly in the last 10 years when, as you say, Michael, our growth rate has been so super low.
Indeed.
All right. I think that is all the time we have for today. We've gone quite long today. But anyway, I hope you found the show interesting. We will, of course, be back tomorrow with the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a wonderful day. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.